This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldone. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted, the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat. Welcome to episode 252 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander. Why does style have to mean zero comfort? How sick are you of blisters and sore knees and feet from wearing heels all day?
Are you ready to try on the most comfortable flat you've ever worn? That you can wear all day, every day? Seriously, you're never going to want to take them off.
Have you heard about this company making flats from recycled plastic water bottles? Oh, and they're insanely comfortable and stylish.
The shoes I selected were some of the cutest things I've seen. Now, I am not one typically for something like camouflage, even though you could put them on and say, where do my feet go? But they had some really nicely colored camouflage. It was still in the green family, but it was like a mossy green. It was a really pretty one. And it looked very digitized, didn't it, some?
Pixelated.
Yeah.
Camo wasn't the only pattern. They have so many patterns and color options available. And if you aren't into wild and crazy colors, they also have your standard black.
Is that the one you got?
Of course I did. I need them to go with everything. What can I say?
There's going to be a shoe for every taste, for every person. They have a wide range of designs. So Rothy's is the everyday flat for life on the go. It's stylish, classic, comfortable, and comes in three fashionable styles. The flat, which we've gotten, the point, and the loafer.
You have to check these shoes out. And then you're going to want to tell every woman you know about the sustainability. It will blow your mind that they are made from recycled plastic water bottles because they are the softest shoe you'll ever put on your feet. And you can feel good about wearing them.
I love my Rothy's, and I know you will too. Right now, Rothy's has an amazing deal for our listeners. Use code OUTLANDER to get free shipping. No minimum.
That's free shipping, free returns and exchanges on your Rothy's shoe. And trust me, you won't return them.
Go to Rothy's.com. That's Rothy's.com. And enter Outlander to get your cute shoes and free shipping.
No brainer. Shoes that are comfortable, stylish, and sustainable. And free shipping. Go get yourself a pair today at Rothy's.com. Promo code Outlander. Get this deal while it lasts.
This episode is part of our Drums of Autumn read-along. To find out more and how to participate, visit outlanderpod.com/DOA.
And now, on to our read-along. This week, we are continuing with our Drums of Autumn read-along with Chapter 37, entitled Gloriana.
We learn a few things this chapter. First, of course, is that Roger is finally on his way to the colonies. Second, that the workday aboard the Gloriana for a seaman/sailor is 14 hours. Holy monkey.
What else are they going to do?
Yeah, that's true.
It's not a pleasure cruise. I mean, the boat always sails. I mean, they have to keep working at it. I mean, I don't know what he expected.
We also learned that Roger, while in reasonably good shape, isn't in 18th century seaman shape.
Oh my God, please call him a sailor.
He's got blisters, sore muscles, and, quote, bone-deep fatigue that sprang as much from the constant chill of damp clothes as from the work, unquote. Have you ever done, obviously being physical, physical labor or physical work, what's the most physical like job you've ever done and that you didn't, whether you liked it or not? What was the most physical task or chore?
Like, do I have to have been paid for it? Or are you just saying like physical labor?
Sure. Either way.
I was like, I have not been paid, but I do lots of outdoorsy work on my boyfriend's property. We, you know, chop wood for the fire and fell trees. And we were repairing a fence last weekend. That was labor. It's very physical.
Right now, I think the most physical, and I do need to go back to exercising, obviously, and or at least walking more.
Is your answer cleaning your kitty litter box?
Shut the fuck up, Summer. No, I forget what I was going to say. I honestly don't know what I would say. I don't know that I'm very labor intensive right now. Oh, yeah, I'm definitely not chopping wood.
Well, I mean, we're not hand chopping wood. We have a splitter, but we still have to like haul the wood out and move it and
stack it or load it onto something if you're going
to
move it.
And then I have to drive the tractor.
Actually, it's funny that you mentioned kitty litter. Changing kitty litter is not that, I mean, unless you have like a lot of cats and thus a lot of litter to clean, kitty litter is not that labor intensive, especially if you keep up with it. But I swear, okay, I'm not lazy because what I'm about to tell you will prove that I'm not lazy. However, the reason I do the things that I'm about to discuss or tell you is because I feel like I'm lazy. So, example, I will go to the store, typically Target. I'll go to the store to get cat litter and I get the store brand unscented. So I don't like to use perfume with my cats.
Because she likes to smell pee.
Summer. No, I just don't want it perfumed. It's a chemical that's not needed around the monkeys. So that's what I typically do. And I will get, no joke, like 4 of those containers. And yes, it lasts me a little bit, maybe a month and a half. But it lasts me quite a while. And the reason I get that 4, now, does that mean when I get home that I'm unloading it all? No way. Depending on what other groceries I'll have, I'll be lucky if I take out 1. And the 3 will stay in there until I either remember, not till
or
I
run
need
out.
It. Nah, I wouldn't say that because I've never had one in there that long. But what I might do is like, you know, as long as the front door is closed, like open the trunk, because I have a parking space really close to my door. I'll just like, you know, make 2 or 3 trips to get them, whatever, or whatever, because I can hold 2 at a time. So my point is, I like to get things like that or things in general in bulk so that I don't have to go back out. So I am truly, I do an act that is truly not lazy so that I can be lazy for the next month. Does that make sense?
It does, but I think you should really investigate Chewy.com and have them deliver it directly to your house.
Well, you know what else? This is obviously a sideways conversation. But so the thing that's been ridiculous though is I tried a new brand which has perfume, so I'm not, and I thought like you did, right? You know, maybe have a little bit of a smell so it's a little bit fresher, so whatever. But the problem with that, and this is on me and I will not do this again, is it was like one of those really concentrated bags that's like 40 pounds in one bag. So I got 2 of them, again, being smart, because I do a really not lazy thing so that I can not have to deal with it for another 2 months or 1 month, whatever. So anyway, I had 2 in my trunk with other groceries. So what happens? I get home, I empty the groceries, I grab one of the bags, and it takes me like 2 hands and like a shuffle to get it to the door. I can barely hold it. It's just not working. So the other 40-pound one stayed in my car. Honestly, probably about a month. That's just how it is. So, yes, I have had food delivered by Chewy. I have not had litter, though I think litter is probably – I typically use Amazon, but I'll go with whoever's cheaper at that time. But I'm a huge fan of having things delivered.
Oh, yeah. I feel just a little bit bad for my mailman. But not
Summer,
bad enough
to stop. You have so much delivered. You should just go ahead and feel for him. Not feel for him. Nope. Feel bad for him.
I will not.
So that was all about labor. Physical labor. So as I said, the end of the quote I said was a bone deep fatigue that sprang as much from the constant chill of damp clothes as from work. Okay, so you know what that means? Constant damp, more opportunity for the chafe.
That's not a dude thing.
I'm not saying it was a dude thing. I'm saying, have you ever been in a situation where your clothing is, whether it's from sweat or whether it's from like a pool, whatever the circumstances are, when your clothing is wet and it's not going to dry anytime soon, or even if it's just a little bit damp and it won't dry? It makes me
think of riding the water rides in the summer at like Great America. Or
last time I did a water. Okay, I'll tell a fun story. So when I was 15, I was a competitive swimmer and I trained to be a lifeguard just a little bit before summer did, right? Because you were too young, I think. But summer trained to be a lifeguard a few years later. So I went
two years later.
So we trained, got through the summer, and I don't think it may have been the next summer. But anyway, we have a local water park and with the water slides and all that. And apparently they have this like lifeguard or instructor, swimming instructor, water instructor appreciation day or time. And we had the opportunity, I worked at the Y at the local Y. I had the opportunity to join fellow instructors, lifeguards, whatever, to get to the water park early to basically like about around 9. So we did a mixture of training because we went in the wave pool. We did some activities and little trainings of, you know, practicing rescue and that kind of thing. But the second half of the morning before the park opened, we got to go on all the water rides. It was fun. Or the water slides. There's this one that's not the typical like loopy and down and out. The one that we have somewhere that goes like almost straight down. Just the straight one.
Yeah. That's the wedgie maker.
Oh, no. If only it were a wedgie. I had my first enema at 15. And I don't think I knew what the word was. So maybe I told the story later on. But it was definitely a booty injection.
Oh, wow. Okay. hashtag that. Hashtag booty injection.
No t-shirt for you.
That'll be the next one. Grande. Booty injection.
No. That's blackjack. I'm just kidding.
No, it is though. Hashtag blackjack. Hashtag booty injection.
Summer.
Nasty.
Okay. So Roger has roughened, painful hands, but he was also surprised at this hunger. He hadn't expected that he would be so hungry. So we get information as people are on boats. Like it was the people on boats while our characters are on boats in or on ships in Voyager. And while here's another example here of where Roger's on a ship. So we get an education, a little education about what life was like in the 18th century on a tall ship from the people we got just. It was only, 20 years? No, excuse me, like 6 or 7 years difference, right? Something like that. Maybe a little bit less.
Did anyone feel like perhaps this book is where they got the inspiration for part of the doldrums?
It wouldn't surprise me.
With the children wanting to touch the irons?
Yeah, we haven't got there yet.
And I didn't remember reading that.
Me either.
The first time through when reading this book. And then when I read it this time through after having seen season 3, I was like, I bet that's where they pulled that from. But I mean, so they didn't pull it literally out of thin air. And I didn't really think that they had. They like to kind of pick and find things that are within the same universe and history, which is our universe. And so I know we're not quite there yet, but I remembered reading that and thinking, I wonder if that's where they got the idea for that part of the doldrums.
We have got to tell, dear listener, you about an amazing new service that we found called FrameBridge. FrameBridge makes it easy and affordable to custom frame your favorite things, from art prints and posters to the photos on your phone.
And here's how it works. Just go to FrameBridge.com. Upload your photo from your computer or directly from your Instagram feed for them to print. Or if you have a physical item like ticket stubs, art prints, or posters, you name it, they'll provide secure prepaid packaging so you can mail it in for free.
Preview your item online in any frame style. Choose your favorite or get free recommendations from their talented designers. Expert team at FrameBridge will custom frame your item in days, not weeks or months, and deliver your finished piece directly to your door, ready to hang.
The best part? Instead of the hundreds you'd pay at a framing store, their prices start at $39, and all shipping is free.
Plus, our listeners will get 15% off their first order at framebridge.com when they use our code Outlander.
Framebridge has thousands of five-star reviews and even offers a happiness guarantee. If for any reason you aren't 100% satisfied with your order, they'll make it right.
Now, if you saw us on Instagram Live, we did a little unboxing of our latest Framebridge picture, and it is directly related to Outlander in Scotland, and that is the beautiful Highland Coo. It was gorgeous.
And it was from a picture I took with my iPhone, y'all. Like, not even like a fancy camera, and it looks amazing, like gallery quality.
So get started framing your photos or art today. Go to framebridge.com and use promo code Outlander. You'll save an additional 15% off your first order.
Just go to framebridge.com, promo code Outlander. That's framebridge.com, promo code Outlander.
Reading Diana, you cannot help but get an education in whatever your characters are immersed in, whether it's an 18th century ship, the 18th century Jamaica from Voyager, 1960s Boston, or 1960s Inverness. So we learn necessarily a little bit about the place in that time. And it's no different here on the Gloriana. So a little bit about the state of life on a ship in the 18th century, specifically a British vessel. So I found a really interesting, not article, a set of descriptions. There was a television show on the BBC where some people, you know those shows, 1900 House, Victorian House, where they do their best to a degree.
That's PBS.
Yeah, where, and the BBC had their own versions, where people are selected to do this. It is reality TV in a way, but it is kind of constructed. So they find an old house or a castle or whatever the setting may be, and they have someone to fulfill the role of the lord and the lady, someone to fulfill the role maybe of the children, someone to fulfill the role of the servants, etc. Someone to be the tutor.
The upstairs, downstairs of the whole thing. I thought those were fascinating.
I love those shows. They're the best. And so they went down to like the clothing you had, the clothing that the people, everyday people would wear while they were there. They ate there, lived there, slept there, cooked there. Like they literally were the servants and prepared everything. And when it came time to do laundry, they used whatever centuries laundering techniques to do the laundry of the actual clothes that the lord and lady or whomever of that abode war. And so they did it seems, if I'm reading it correctly, a similar experiment on the sea with people on a ship. And so they had the type of food they had. They had the jobs. These men, mostly men, I believe, they ran the ship the way that they would have had people in the same ranks.
Did they have a legless chef?
I don't think they had that.
That's a shame.
So I will be quoting from this a little bit throughout as it kind of comes up, as it fits the part of the chapter. So that's the background on this thing that I found. And we'll share it in the show notes. It's called, if I have it correctly, it's BBC and it's Empire Sea Power, Life at Sea. So the first bit.
That's a porn title.
Empire Sea Power?
Uh-huh.
Empire?
Life at Sea. I know. Ginger, I'm just joking.
Okay, but I don't even get it.
Empire Sea Power. Life at Sea.
Sailors generally went to sea as boys. By the time they were 16, they could be rated as seamen, summer's favorite word, and normally served at sea for another 10 years before settling down and taking a shore or local sailing job. The idea of being single, free of responsibilities, and well-paid would have made a career at sea obviously alluring, but the attractions could also undoubtedly wear off, and only a small percentage of men stayed on at sea, rising to be naval petty officers and merchant shipmasters. We learn from Diana that one of Roger's seaman workmates is named Duff. And the first time I read the next line, I laughed. Take heart, man. Grub is in twa balls. Yeah, it wasn't balls. It was bells.
I don't like my grub in between two balls. Just going to put that out there.
I didn't say between. I said in twa balls.
Yeah, in two balls, which means it's probably, I assume, in between. If someone is going to serve me something. Summer,
maybe they're stuffed.
Okay, still.
So Roger and the other workers are loading the ship, preparing for launch. Lots of water was being brought along, of course, because, you know, they had to bring all the water they would need for the 6 to 8 week journey, all the food they would need, etc. It took 2 days to finish the loading. Passengers boarded late afternoon, finally, with bags, bundles, some even with Kay's chickens. And of course, there were children. And these people were to go into steerage, quote, a space created by the erection of a bulkhead across the forward hold, unquote. Talk about a cruise, as Summer said. On the Gloriana, passengers had to pay for their passage and they had to pay extra for food. Some, as we learned in the last chapter, brought their food for all 6 weeks. Back then, how do you get that much? Second of all, how do you make sure it doesn't go nasty?
Can we talk about the fact that sailing is a very male-centric activity with all the semen and erections?
Oh, Lord, Summer.
And the balls that they're being fed in between.
Roger helps some of the people aboard and finds that many of the women were layered in clothing. Many or all of the items that they owned in the world were on their person. One little toddler who is there with his mom is simply not having it. Roger tries to convince him to let him pick him up so his mother can handle her load. The little boy had solved. Stop it.
I told you it was a porn. I told you.
Okay, that's the title. It's not a porn. Little boy has soft blonde curls. Roger picks him up and takes him across the deck, and his mother follows them, and he helps them down the ladder. Then Roger sees another young woman, and something caught his eye. She looked different than the others. She still had a bit of curiosity and hope about her. Quote, a tall, fair-haired young man was with her, a baby in his arms. He touched her shoulder in reassurance, and she glanced up at him, an answering smile lighting her face like the striking of a match, unquote. Diana rarely shows a tableau like this for no reason. Let's keep these people in mind.
Should we call them a grande?
No.
Future grande?
No.
No?
And then Roger is called to get back to work. In the next scene, they're already on the open sea, so apparently they got out there safely. Things are going smoothly for a few weeks, Diana writes, and even those who became seasick were mostly getting better. Quote,
Full disclosure, though. They're sailing from, what, Inverness, Edinburgh?
Inverness.
One of those places. So they're sailing from Scotland. They're in open sea pretty much the second they pass Ireland. So it would not take long to get into open sea.
Stormy weather became good winds. Even those who became seasick were mostly getting better. Quote, the smell of vomit from the steerage subsided, becoming only a minor note in the symphony of stinks aboard the Gloriana. I love that.
Didn't Roger make mention to the fact that a few days aboard the ship, he became kind of nose blind?
Roger, like Ginger, had been born with an acute sense of smell. This is directly related to what you said. Quote,
I'm like, are you going to acknowledge me or just move on?
Quote, an attribute he was finding a marked liability in close quarters. unquote. Yep, and again I say yep, absolutely. He definitely became nose blind. It got better.
It gets better.
His experience with the herring fishers in the Minch had given, quote, a keen appreciation of the weather, with the sailor's unsettling knowledge that his life might depend on whether the sun was shining that day, unquote. And Diana tells us, quote, his new shipmates were not friendly, unquote. They regarded him with a certain watchful distance. He didn't know if it was his accent or his size, but they were distant. And he was actually okay with this. He's learning more about Captain Bonnet, too. He was known, the captain, to be a good captain, quote, hard but fair, and a man whose voyages always turned a profit. To the seamen, many of whom sailed on shares rather than wages, this latter quality plainly more than compensated for any small defects of character or address, unquote. Few were brave enough to get close to Bonnet. Only the first mate and the bosun spoke directly to him. And Roger, ever the historian, was more interested in the passengers than the crew. Passengers were allowed on deck twice each day for fresh air and to empty slop jars over the side and get the rest of their water rations. Seeing the people at these times was something he looked forward to. It helped break up his day, and he tried to make sure that he was working and on duty near the end of the deck where they appeared. He craved their company as a human, but also his ears were soothed by their accent, by their talk. Quote, here were the seeds of the new country, the legacy of the old. What these poor emigrants knew and valued was what would endure and be passed on, unquote.
How tempted would you be to just like put your fingers in all those pots and like screw up the future of the American colonies?
You mean kill them?
No, just like pepper it with like new like language stylings and things that would totally ruin.
Oh, you said put your finger in the pots. I'm like, are you like saying like add diarrhea finger to their fresh water?
Yes, Ginger. I want everyone to have dysentery.
That's what I'm asking about. You mean cholera?
Yep. I want smallpox blankets for all.
It would be funny if he tinkered with that.
I'm just saying. He's like, you know what?
I got lots of power. This is totally the wrong era.
Like, you know, I like big butts and I cannot lie.
Oh, Summer.
Throw in a little Sir Mix-a-Lot.
Diana shares examples of the things that would be passed on. A recipe for warts involving a toad, of course. Folk songs.
A dried toad. Not even like a live one, a dried one. And honestly, where do you find those? Is there a place you can get them now? And does it really work?
Catch it, kill it, and dry it.
Like with a food dehydrator or just sit it out in the sun?
I would what put are we it talking in the about? Sun.
Like put it in a slow roasting oven?
No, I don't even want to talk about that. That's gross. Folk songs, prayers, woven wool, and Celtic patterns of their art. And then we see something that was done in season 3 on board the ship with Jamie and Claire et al. The crew all touched that iron horseshoe, if you remember.
But it sounds like they did it a little late.
Yeah.
If you're speaking, I know you like to tell the story of the chapter sequentially.
Yeah.
And if you're telling it sequentially right now, that means that they were at open sea and far away from land when they were talking about touching the iron.
Well, that's not me. This is Diana. But just because Diana describes the fact that once they're let out of the hold or whatever, the berth, once they're let out of their hidey hole, that some of them come up to touch the iron, I think this is just an example, a description of a typical day. I don't think they waited to touch the iron. However, Diana did not give us an example of anyone boarding and touching the iron. You're right.
Did I feel like everyone on the other ship in season 3, there none of them were quote unquote passengers. So I don't know if passengers are required or if it's every soul on board.
Well, the ones clearly, in Voyager, it was the crew.
Okay. So then it wasn't particularly necessary for the small children to touch said iron before they can no longer see land.
No, I think it was just we have this deeply held.
They saw everyone else doing it and they want to touch it.
We have this deeply held belief And we think it's going to protect us from anything at sea, from getting sick, etc.
Oh, no. No, I'm talking about the passengers, the children wanting to touch the iron. That could just be them saying, hey, can we touch it? We saw everybody else touch it.
No, I think they say that there's a description in there about how Diana. Yeah, I'll read it in a second.
Does it say Diana?
No, Diana wrote this.
There's a description about how Diana.
A small girl comes up to Roger and asks him if she and her brothers may touch the iron. Quote, iron was protection and healing. The mothers often sent the little ones who were ailing to touch it. Unquote.
Ah.
And I looked up iron in folklore. And here's a little bit about that. So there's cold iron is a poetic term for iron. It has been defined as a sword or any other weapon for cutting or stabbing. And cold iron is historically believed to repel, contain, or harm ghosts, fairies, witches, and other malevolent supernatural creatures. This belief continued into later superstitions in a number of forms. They include nailing an iron horseshoe to a door was said to repel evil spirits or later to bring good luck. Surrounding a cemetery with an iron fence was thought to contain the souls of the dead. I think we've all seen a cemetery with an iron fence. Burying an iron knife under the entrance of one's home was alleged to keep witches from entering. This is in addition to the person you murder to go under the foundation.
But would that counteract it if the person you buried under the building was a witch?
That's a good question. I don't know. Horseshoes specifically are considered good luck, a good luck charm in many cultures, including those of Denmark, England, Lithuania, and Estonia. And its shaped fabrication, placement, and manner of sourcing are all important. A common tradition is that if a horseshoe is hung on a door with the two ends pointing up, then good luck will occur. However, if the two ends point downward, then bad luck will occur. Traditions do differ on this point, though. In some cultures, the horseshoe is hung points down, so the luck pours onto you. In others, it's hung points up, so the luck does not fall out. Still in others, it does not matter, so long as the horseshoe has been used, not new, was found, not purchased, and can be touched. In all traditions, luck is contained in the shoe and can pour out through the ends.
I prefer my horseshoes purple and made of freeze-dried marshmallows and in my breakfast cereal.
In some traditions, any good or bad luck achieved will only occur to the owner of the horseshoe, not the person who hangs it. Therefore, if the horseshoe was stolen, borrowed, or even just found, then the owner, not the person who found or stole the horseshoe, will get any of the good or bad luck.
That's screwed, though. You just said that they couldn't buy it. So finding a horseshoe means that whoever owned it previously is still the person who gets the luck. Can we talk about that?
Other traditions require that the horseshoe be found to be effective. So there you go.
But if you find it, it's effective for the person who owned it and lost it.
Unless they,
right?
unless
That's
they
what
die.
You just said.
Unless they die.
And then is it bequeathed to the next owner of the horseshoe or to the next remaining kin of the person who died?
The article doesn't mention.
Oh.
One reputed origin of the tradition of lucky horseshoes is the story of St. Dunstan and the devil. Dunstan, who would become the Archbishop of Canterbury in AD 959, was a blacksmith by trade. The story relates that he once nailed a horseshoe in the devil's hoof when he was asked to reshoe the devil's horse. This caused the devil great pain, and Dunstan only agreed to remove the shoe and release the devil after the devil promised never to enter a place where a horseshoe is hung over the door. Another theory concerning the placing of horseshoes above doorways is to ward off fairies. The theory being that supernatural beings are repelled by iron, and as horseshoes were an easily available source of iron, they could be nailed above a door to prevent any unwanted otherworldly guests. And we'll include that link in the show notes as well. That was also Wikipedia. So Roger sees that so many of the children, so remember, I just said that sometimes the mothers would send the children who were ailing to touch this horseshoe. Roger sees that so many of them, the children, have rashes and hears about the passengers, hears about their boils, their loose teeth, and fever. They were living on oatmeal mostly. Now, the crew did get meat, but also starch. He could feel the result the beginning of the results of malnutrition. His gums were beginning to bleed from the lack of fresh veggies. Now, before he left, I believe Diana means before he left the 20th century. But before he left, he looked up scurvy to see what the symptoms were, so he knew kind of the timeline and how long he had. Quote, a normal adult male in good health should be able to endure from 3 to 6 months of prolonged vitamin deficiency before suffering any real symptoms, unquote. And with luck, they'd be to the colonies in 2 months. What were you going to say?
And the more I thought about it, the more I let it go.
Okay.
Because at first I was like, he didn't know for sure he was going to be on a boat. But then I was like, no, he was going in Scotland and he assumed that Bree was going to the colonies, which means there was
a boat
that would have to happen in his future. So and then I held it back and was going to be quiet. But thanks for making me keep talking
about
it.
There you go. So back to that article, that experiment by the BBC on that program where they had people traveling by sea, living on the diet of the 18th century, wearing the clothes, doing the jobs, etc. A diet of salt meat, hard biscuit, and sauerkraut was a shock to us. This is written in the from the person of one of the experimenters, if you will. This diet was a shock to us. Our predecessors, those who lived in the 18th century, would have considered it superior to anything available on shore. For them, such regular, hot, protein-rich meals, together with a nearly limitless supply of beer, would have been a luxury. Furthermore, every ship's captain knew that food was the primary concern of his crew, so he would have ensured that they were well-fed and kept their dinner time sacred, usually allowing the men 90 minutes to deal with their tough rations. They would only be called away from the mess table in an emergency. And further, Cook's determination to avoid deaths from scurvy and his success was a vital step in the creation of the British Empire. So important was the avoidance of the disease that Cook resorted to disciplinary measures to make his men eat their rations. We modern day adventurers had to take a vitamin pill. Other diseases such as dysentery and typhus were avoided through the insistence on keeping the ship, the crew, and their clothes clean. This cleanliness became a Royal Navy mania and kept the sailors very busy. However, there were further medical terrors in store. Malaria and yellow fever could decimate crews in tropical climates.
Especially crews that don't have a Claire.
Morag, the woman who'd been with her man on deck, the one with the infant, was there speaking to him. And they're literally talking about the weather. An old woman is standing behind Morag and she's urging her to ask Roger something. And she's just not doing it. Roger gives his name when he's asked as Mackenzie. Quote, ah, Mackenzie, it is. Well, there, you see, Morag, and belike he'll be some kinsman of your man's and happy to do you service at that. Unquote. So Morag, we find out, is nursing that infant and thus needs more water. So he gives her more. He wished he could hear the emigrants down below, hear their songs and their stories. But one thing kept him going and filled his thoughts day and night. Brianna. Each man had 18 inches of sleeping space. Dang, Summer, that is not enough room for me and my 3 pillows and 2 cats.
You're so silly.
How much?
I wouldn't mind 18 inches if it's, you know, given to me in the way I want it.
That's not appropriate.
Isn't it? I'm just saying, if somebody else had the rest of it and they were spooning me and it was comfortable, I could deal with my 18 inches.
Roger dealt with this by sleeping on his side. When she'd gone through the stones, Brianna, quote, she had taken with her all peace of mind. He lived in a mixture of fear and anger, spiced with the hurt of betrayal, unquote. In his heart, he knew why she had gone. He knew it. He's just still having a hard time with it. And another time that Diana brings together Claire and Roger. Quote, Claire knew too. She'd been orphaned, lost her uncle, been separated from her husband during the war. She knew a lot about being alone, unquote. The reason I make this comparison and bring in Roger is because Roger's saying that Claire knew what it was like to be alone because of her own experiences, and thus she knew that when she left the 20th century that Brianna would be alone and essentially an orphan. And that's why she left him in the care of Roger. But also, don't forget, Claire and Roger have a lot in common, too. And that was why she didn't want Bree to be alone, as I said. So though he knew and loved her and wanted her, Bree, he felt doubt. Doubt of her feelings and doubt of his. Quote, "For the first time since his passage through the stones, he realized what she had meant in refusing him and knew her hesitance for wisdom," unquote. As he settles down for the night, he hears the nightly sounds and imagines, quote, "the tall, fair-haired young man, the brown-haired lass with the open face, saw them look at each other as they had on the quay and would have sold his soul to know such certainty," unquote.
And that was chapter 37. Join us next week when we will be discussing chapter 38, entitled "For Those in Peril on the Sea." I feel like bad things are coming.
As always, join us to continue the conversation in our Facebook community. Find us at outlanderpod.com/group.
And if you want to find out more about being a contributor to our read-along, you can go to outlanderpod.com/DOA.
If you love our show and are entertained by it, please consider supporting us on Patreon. There are also a number of free ways to help support our show. The most important is to help spread the word. Tell your friends and family who love Outlander about the Outlander podcast. Thank you, as always, so much for listening. We look forward to our next episode. Thank you to our generous partner, Zencastr, who offers high-fidelity podcasting. Check out Zencastr and use coupon code OUTLANDER20, OUTLANDER20, for 20% off 3 months or 20% off for a year. Connect with us. Visit our website at outlanderpod.com. Find us on Facebook, facebook.com/outlanderpod. We'd love for you to join our Facebook community at outlanderpod.com/group. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at outlanderpod.